It was 24 years ago, in the early hours of December 9th, 1981, that Philadelphia police officer Daniel Faulkner was found dead on a Center City street corner. Renowned radio journalist and former Black Panther Mumia Abu-Jamal was laying nearby, unconscious in a pool of blood, shot once through his liver. While the events of that fateful night may never be known, one thing is for sure. Abu-Jamal was convicted in 1982 for Faulkner's murder and has been on Pennsylvania's death row ever since. But his conviction has been condemned worldwide by supporters and activists who say the original trial was marred by prosecutorial misconduct and judicial misconduct. Falsified ballistics evidence were introduced at trial, witness testimony coerced by police, and 11 qualified African-American jurors were dismissed based on race. Mumia Abu-Jamal has consistently maintained his innocence in the killing. His supporters have demanded a new trial. For the last 24 years, he's been locked up 23 hours a day, denied contact visits with family, had confidential legal mail illegally opened by prison authorities, and was put into punitive detention for writing Live from Death Row, his first of three books written from prison. Mumia Abu-Jamal has survived two warrants for his execution, one in 1995 and again in December 1999. 4 years ago, Federal District Court Judge William H. Yon Jr. threw out his death sentence, ruling that Mumia Abu-Jamal was entitled to a new sentencing hearing, but the decision denied him the right to a new trial. The case is currently on appeal, and he still resides on Pennsylvania's death row. The case is simultaneously being heard in two different courts, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals and the Pennsylvania State Court of Common Pleas, both of which sit in Philadelphia. This week, on December 6th, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals expanded the basis of Mumia's pending federal habeas corpus petition. Joining me by telephone to speak about the latest news is Jeff Mackler, co-coordinator of the mobilization to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Jeff Mackler, thanks for joining me today. I'd like to begin with some discussion on the latest ruling, which I think is good news for Mumia. The court did agree to hear three of his claims, and I'd like to take them one by one. Claim 14 concerns whether Mumia was denied due process during his Post-Conviction Relief Act proceedings as a result of alleged judicial bias. And can you explain what this means?
Actually, I think a little background would be helpful. Because the two previous legal teams inadvertently neglected to file charges that Mumia had been the victim of judicial bias, not from the Post-Conviction Relief Act period, but from the time of his 1982 trial, we were not able to go back to the trial presenting proof that Judge Szabo, his Common Pleas Court trial judge, was biased. So therefore, we can only deal with judicial bias coming out of the PCRA hearing, which is Post-Conviction Relief Act hearing. Most states have a provision where if you come up with new evidence after the conviction, you are allowed post-conviction relief. And the trial in 1995, the hearing, was presided over by the same notorious hanging judge, Albert Szabo, who presided over Mumia's 82 trial. So we have another, the defense is presenting a number of issues that took place during that hearing where Judge Szabo intervened to prevent evidence from being admitted that demonstrated Mumia's innocence. That includes witnesses who recanted their testimony during the trial period and said that they had lied in court on the witness stand in saying that they were there on the murder scene and saw Mumia kill police officer Faulkner. Actually, they said that they were told by the police that either they lie or they spend years in jail, lose their kids, and so on, because many of the people involved were prostitutes that the prosecution had used to testify against Mumia. So this has to do with presenting evidence that took place during the PCRA hearing, which the judge had excluded from consideration previously. And I don't have the details. We just got the decision a few days ago. Mumia's chief counsel, Robert R. Bryan, is in England, and the issues that are raised in that are not clear at this point. But there were several instances where evidence was excluded that pointed to Mumia's innocence.
The court also accepted claim number 16, which deals with prosecutorial racism during the jury selection. I mentioned this in the opening, but can you just kind of recap what happened at Mumia's original trial?
During Mumia's trial, 11 of the 14 black jurors who had certified that they would convict someone, that they were not opposed to the death penalty, were preemptorily excluded. And that, in our view, by the prosecution, in violation of a Supreme Court decision called Batson versus Kentucky. The Batson issue is a famous Supreme Court decision that bars the exclusion of black jurors without cause. And that's what happened. So when we initially filed our appeal with the federal courts, that is the federal district court, which is below the level of the court that made the decision this week, Judge William H. Yon Jr. gave us a certificate of appealability to appeal this issue. So nothing new has happened in that. The court had to consider that review, whether they liked it or not. What's new in the decision that took place this Monday is that the Third Circuit U.S. Court of Appeal decided to give us certificates of appealability on two other issues that the federal district court refused to give us certificates on. One was the judicial bias, and the other was the violation of Mumia's constitutional rights in regard to the summation that the prosecutor, Joseph McGill, gave during Mumia's trial. Now, the Batson issue is an extremely important issue. Let me give you the reasons why. When we appealed to the federal district court after we lost in the state, we submitted a series of highly documented studies that were done by the city of Philadelphia and the state of Pennsylvania, demonstrating by the state's facts themselves that blacks had been systematically excluded from Pennsylvania and Philadelphia juries. And Judge Yon threw these studies out on the grounds that they were done prior to Mumia's trial and did not include Mumia's trial himself. Well, he was factually mistaken on that matter. Not only were they done concurrently with Mumia's trial, but they included the statistics from the jury selection at Mumia's trial itself. So they were perfectly on point, but Judge Yon just didn't read them carefully enough. So this is now all before the court, and if the court is consistent, they will do what they did in a recent case, which was won in the U.S. Supreme Court by Miller L. Miller L. was a Texas man who filed a suit against the state of Texas for his conviction based on the exclusion of blacks, based on the state of Texas literally writing and using a manual to train prosecutors, a training manual as to how to exclude blacks and Jews from Texas juries. And Miller L. got a new trial because of it. The Supreme Court ruled so in Miller L. versus Dredge. Now, in Mumia's case, the state of Pennsylvania had previously did not have a training manual, but they had a training video that was produced by a current sitting judge, Ronald Castillo, who at the time was the attorney general of the state of Pennsylvania, with the Pennsylvania seal on the training video. And the video's purpose was to train, secretly, of course, Pennsylvania prosecutors as to how to exclude blacks from juries. So we have a wealth of information to say that there was a systematic exclusion of blacks on the grounds that blacks, the racist grounds, that blacks are presumed to be more lenient with other blacks in regard to death penalty convictions. So that's an extremely strong issue that we had all along. Now, in the summation part of the trial, the 1982 trial, Joseph McGill told the jury in his closing arguments, he said in effect, "Jury, if you decide to find Mumia guilty, it's not the end of the road, because he will have appeal after appeal to challenge the ruling, and if you guys have made any mistakes, it'll all be corrected in the long run." Well, that was an outrageous summation, so outrageous that the same summation in another case in Pennsylvania against a black person on death row resulted in a new trial on appeal, because the summation essentially lowered the standard of innocence and reasonable doubt that the jury is obligated to abide by in their deliberations. Essentially, they said, even if you have reasonable doubt, said Joseph McGill, in effect, even if you have reasonable doubt that Mumia was the killer of police officer Falk, that's okay. Convict him anyway, and he's got lots of appeals where he can reverse it. So we are hoping that the combination of the three issues will result in a new trial for Mumia. This is a great breakthrough. After 24 years of telling the defense team that everything was done according to the rules, that none of Mumia's constitutional rights were violated, that the judicial system worked perfectly, that there was no evidence of race bias, and that all previous courts agreed with it, we suddenly have a decision 24 years later saying that the entire procedures used against him were, at least at this point, improper or worthy of appeal in the federal courts.
While this is certainly good news for Mumia and supporters alike, the court did reject about two dozen other complaints. Can you kind of just summarize some of those complaints that the court rejected?
Our original brief to the federal district court contained some 29 issues. Judge Yawn in the federal district court threw out 27 of them and granted us one, actually two. The one was the exclusion of black jurors. And the other one was, we argued that the sentencing instructions during the sentencing phase of Mumia's trial, a separate phase, by Judge Sabo were fundamentally flawed when Judge Sabo said to the jury, if you are going to find mitigating circumstances so as to not give Mumia a sentence of execution by lethal injection, you have to be unanimous. And all court decisions in the Supreme Court on that question rejected that instruction. They did not require unanimity to find mitigating circumstances. So Judge Yawn, following Supreme Court precedents, threw out the execution sentence and told the state of Pennsylvania that they either had to give Mumia a new sentencing hearing in 180 days, or in the alternative, he would automatically sentence Mumia to life in prison. Well, the state of Pennsylvania got a stay on that hearing, that mandatory hearing, because they appealed it to the Third Circuit. And we were shocked to find that in addition to the positive aspects of the Third Circuit's ruling this Monday, they granted the state of Pennsylvania a certificate of appealability to challenge that ruling, that is, to uphold the instructions to the jury by Judge Sabo. If the state of Pennsylvania is successful now in the Third Circuit, that is, if unanimity is required and Judge Sabo's instructions is therefore correct, were correct, then Mumia will be subject to an immediate order for his execution. He's already beaten back two orders for his execution, and it's certain that Ed Rendell, the governor of Pennsylvania, will file a third one. Of course, as in the past, we will file for a stay of the execution because our case is still pending in the Third Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals. But in other words, we are one decision away from the execution of Mumia Abu-Jamal. Now, on a technical point, most of the lawyers we have talked to who are expert in the field believe that the state of Pennsylvania has no chance of prevailing on this particular issue. That is, Sabo's instructions were flawed, and Mumia is not going to face another order of execution. But in this day and age, nothing can be taken for granted, and the courts may well decide to come up with some new interpretation of the law that we haven't seen and reverse Judge Yawn and result in Mumia's sentence to execution. Now, in regard to your specific question, what about the other 27 issues? Judge Yawn cited the 1996 Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act in essentially wiping us out on 20 7 of the 29 issues that were in our original habeas brief. That is, he refused to allow us to appeal to the U.S. Court of Appeals Third Circuit. Prior to the 96 law, the Effective Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, we didn't need a certificate of appealability. It was automatic. If you lost before the federal district court, you appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals and then to the Supreme Court. But because of the reactionary nature of the 96 law signed by President Clinton, and for a reason, the reason that law was signed into existence is because 40% of the state court convictions in murder cases had been reversed on federal appeal. And the reactionaries who dominated the judicial and political system at that time and still do wanted to make state court murder convictions effective, that is, immune from appeal. So they fundamentally took steps to eliminate the right of appeal by now essentially saying that in order, if you lose in the federal district court, the only way you can appeal is the very judge that rules against you has to give you a certificate to appeal his own decision. That's what Judge Yon did 4 years ago. He gave us a certificate of appealability. He said, I don't agree with you that blacks were systematically excluded and therefore the trial had to be done again, but I'm going to let you appeal it. On the other 24 issues, he said, the law requires, the standard has been raised so high that you practically have to prove innocence in order to appeal. Well, in other cases, the U.S. Supreme Court has said that standard is too high, and therefore we expected the Third Circuit to grant us many more issues based on Supreme Court precedent, but we didn't get it. So we'll most likely appeal that question to the U.S. Supreme Court. And what are those issues? We said that Mumia was denied the right to self-representation. That is, he did not want the court-appointed attorney who was a cocaine addict and a self-confessed incompetent. He testified, this lawyer, at the 1995 Post-Conviction Relief Act hearing that he was not competent to try a murder case, that he had interviewed virtually none of the witnesses, that he was wiped out on cocaine, and Mumia tried to fire him. And Judge Sable insisted that this lawyer remain on the case. So we said that violates his constitutional right to self-representation. We filed another charge that said that Mumia was systematically excluded from the courtroom. He missed the majority of his trial because he protested the judge's decision to not let him represent himself, and he was thrown out of court. He was not allowed a co-counsel of his choice, so he filed on that. Evidence that proved his innocence was systematically excluded by the prosecution from the proceedings. Insufficient funds were given to the defense to do forensic and ballistics tests. So it was essentially, we argued, a one-sided railroad or kangaroo court where Mumia's case was not presented. Witnesses were intimidated by the prosecution and caused to lie, another violation of his constitutional rights. We have lost on all of these questions.
Now, these can never be brought forward into another court?
I believe that we have the formal right to appeal these questions to the U.S. Supreme Court. I also believe that we have a slim chance, given the current court, this is politics and a racist case, to say the least, I don't think we will prevail with the current Supreme Court. But in any case, we did win. We now have three key issues that are on appeal. So I should explain what the real meaning of this is. Mumia is the defense, and Mumia has his lawyers must file by January 17th a brief with the Court of Appeal on the three issues that I mentioned, at which point the state of Pennsylvania has 30 days to respond to that appeal, after which point I believe that the legal team then has another 15 days, perhaps 30, to file a rebuttal. And the final word is then 15 or 30 days later by the state of Pennsylvania. And then all written briefs are completed. At that point, the Third Circuit, U.S. Court of Appeals, can decide to grant the defense, Mumia, oral arguments, that is, the attorneys can actually appear before a 10-judge panel and argue the case. That's optional. We may or may not have that hearing. We hope we do. If we do, we are going to mobilize tens of thousands of people in the streets of that city to make sure that it is clear that the world knows that a great injustice has been done to Mumia Abu-Jamal. But in any case, the court may decide to not grant oral arguments and just decide the case. The case is now on the fast track. They will most likely decide the case in a matter of months. Now, what are the options for them? One, they could rule against us. If they do, then Mumia remains on death row. Two, they could rule against us and against the state of Pennsylvania regarding the sentencing hearing. If they do that, then Mumia remains on death row for the rest of his life. They could also rule against us and rule for the state of Pennsylvania, in which case the state of Pennsylvania will most likely immediately, the governor will sign the third warrant for Mumia's execution. Another choice is they could rule for us on one, two, or three of the certificates of appealability that we now have. That is the three issues that you outlined at the beginning of this interview. They could, if they did that, remand any one or all of those issues back to the federal district court and say to Judge Yon, well, we've overturned you. We want you to reconsider these three issues and come up with a better or another or a reevaluation of your decision. At which point, Judge Yon could say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize it. I'll give Mumia a new trial. Or Judge Yon could say, I've seriously considered this, and regardless of your decision in the Third Circuit, I'm going to rule the same way. At which point, we can appeal Yon's decision again and go back up to the Third Circuit. In the alternative, another choice is that the Third Circuit could say, we have considered the three issues, we agree with the defendant, and we order a new trial. At that point, all hell will break loose, because what no one in the world in the judicial system, in the establishment, expected will have happened, and that is the trial of Mumia Abu-Jamal will have been demonstrated before the whole world to have been a racist frame-up. And Mumia will proceed back to the original court, the Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas, with a brand new trial, with a brand new jury, with all of the evidence that had been previously suppressed now out in the open. And there have been a number of district attorneys who have stated, including McGill, that if Mumia ever got a new trial, the state of Pennsylvania would never win, and he would be free. So that's the scenario. There's even an outside chance, I can imagine, that the Court of Appeals could say that the proceedings were so backward that they call for his freedom. But I think you have the basic options. New life is now into the case, and I think the whole world is going to be watching to see what the U.S. Court of Appeals says.
How can listeners impact the decision by the courts?
Well, to do the same thing that the mobilization to free Mumia Abu-Jamal and the International Concern Family and Friends of Mumia, which is the national organization that we are affiliated with, has been doing for 25 years. And that is to mobilize a massive movement deeply rooted in the communities of this country to make the legal price of Mumia's illegal racist execution too high to pay in regard to a massive loss of credibility by millions, tens of millions in the criminal justice system. We have to build a social movement that makes it impossible for them to kill Mumia. And in the Bay Area, the best way to do that is to become active in the mobilization to free Mumia here in Northern California. Our offices are in San Francisco, and you can reach us by phone at 415-255-1085. That's 255-1085. We meet regularly. We have an incredible amount of literature. We have videos on the history of the film. And we have resolutions passed by organizations across the world and the United States supporting a new trial and freedom for Mumia Abu-Jamal. So if you'd like to belong to a democratic, open, and honest defense committee that has organized demonstrations of 25,000 people for Mumia's freedom, and have organized conferences of thousands and teach-ins and lectures and videotapes and debates, get involved and join the mobilization to free Mumia Abu-Jamal here in San Francisco. Contact us at 255-1085.
That was Jeff Mackler of the San Francisco-based Mobilization to Free Mumia Abu Jamal. They're online at freemumia.org. You're tuned into Rockin' the Boat on Freak Radio, 101.1 FM.